Miss Sikorsky saw me sitting at the library table wondering what to read. I was probably 7 years old in second grade, and with my class at Landisville Elementary School during the reading period. Miss Sikorsky, the librarian, came to me and wondered if I would like a suggestion for some books to read. I agreed, and she suggested maybe I'd like some stories she called tall tales. One was about a large cowboy whose name I can't remember, and the other was about Paul Bunyan, a giant lumberjack, and Babe, his big blue ox. Paul Bunyan carried a large axe, was excellent at cutting down trees. In early elementary school, I was prone to daydreaming. I would sit at my desk and gaze out the window. Or stare at the ceiling. Perhaps I was thinking about the limestone rocks in the playground that Brian thought were dinosaur bones. Or maybe I was dreaming of being on the swings with John, who would tell stories about the Bermuda Triangle and ships that disappear mysteriously. I enjoyed school, probably because I was generally successful, but I do recall that routinely during parent-teacher conferences, there would be gentle admonitions about daydreaming or not working up to my potential or not applying myself. But when Miss Sikorsky introduced me to Paul Bunyan and to other tall tales and to other fiction, I remember being thoroughly engrossed in the book. Also in my childhood, our family subscribed to National Geographic magazine with its glossy pictures from around the world, but also with pictures of the moon and other planets and of our whole solar system. I especially remember the stories about Voyager 1 and Voyager 2, the spacecraft that were launched to take pictures of Saturn and other planets in our system. But they didn't just go out to take pictures, they also carried images from Earth and recordings from Earth, so that if anybody ever out there finds our spaceships, they'll know something about we were here and we existed. It was easy at age 10 for me to imagine that there are aliens out there to find a record of us, as it was to imagine that rocks are dinosaur bones or that mysterious things happen in the ocean. So when I happened upon science fiction in the library at Centerville Junior High School, I was well prepared to become engrossed in book after book after book. A whole new universe opened to me. I remember stories of spaceships being launched, carrying communities of people to other planets or from star to star. Plot lines that were the challenges of starting a new colony on the moon or on Mars, maybe a mysterious death in interstellar space that needed to be investigated, and interactions with aliens who were either very similar to humans or very, very different. Science fiction authors ask, what if questions. What if 100 people were traveling for several generations in a ship from one star to another? What would family look like? How would religion change? How would conflict or romance play out? What if something goes terribly wrong and there's no one to blame but ourselves? And the stories I remember were filled with difference. Machines that might be people, people that might be machines, aliens with too many arms or funny smells or strange customs, and stories of culture where difference was either celebrated or cultures where difference, even a tiny difference, was deviance within the culture. I especially related to smart, quiet students who become heroes or gay characters with gay relationships. And I was drawn to the characters of underdogs and disadvantage and those of low status who found crafty or sneaky or edgy ways to change or subvert the world. Crafty, sneaky, and edgy. So I read Isaiah, imagining, what if? What if the wilderness and the dry land were glad? And by glad, Isaiah means blossoming abundantly with rejoicing and singing. What if weak hands were strengthened and weak knees were made strong? What if the blind could see? What if the deaf could hear? What if the lame could walk? Not just walk, but leap like a deer. Well, Isaiah, I'll tell you what if. I've read science fiction and I know what happens next. Because in science fiction, there are whole wilderness planets that get terraformed into gardens of Eden just for people. Science fiction stories assume lifespans of 100 or 200 or 300 years or longer. Illnesses are cured in fabulous medical facilities. Broken bones are replaced with titanium. Metabolic disorders are cured with gene therapies, and bionic bodies do amazing and miraculous things. And yet, Isaiah, technology breaks. Drought and famine occur. People are still people. In science fiction, people are still greedy and jealous and generous and kind. People are still lost and forsaken, rich and haughty, proud and strong. So, Isaiah, what else are you imagining? Well, Isaiah imagines a holy way, a holy road, a path for God's people, a path for the clean and pure, a path free from lions and wild beasts, where no one can go astray, a path that leads to singing, joy, gladness, and the end of suffering. Isaiah imagines the community of God coming together into Zion. Now, for Isaiah, the vision of the people on the road to Zion was constrained by religious laws, laws about purity. If someone was sick or lame or blind or deaf, they were unclean and excluded from religious ritual and sometimes from community altogether. So for the whole community to be on the road to Zion together, God needed to fix people before they could come together. And it was beyond Isaiah's imagination that the community together would have women there as equal. But what if God doesn't make everybody, every body, pure for the road? What if God doesn't heal everyone? The author Amos Young, who has a brother with disabilities, has written several books about theology and healing and illness. And his three starting assumptions are that we are all created in the image of God, that no one should be defined by the way that they're different, and that disabilities are not necessarily evil or need to be eliminated. In the language of Community Mennonite Church of Lancaster, we might say, you are known and loved by God. Everyone is known and loved by God. So I do wish to hold on to Isaiah's what-if vision of the whole community together on the road. I don't know what Isaiah meant about the road to Zion, but for me, the vision is the community of people on the road to justice, the road to mercy, the road to right relationship with love, despite our difference and impurity and our frailty and weak knee. So Mary, imagining what if from the perspective of Mary, my soul is filled with joy and I sing to God my Savior. You have looked upon your servant, you have visited your people, and holy is your name. Mary is not the center of the community of people on the road, free from lions to go to Zion. Mary is unwed, if not quite single, pregnant, and not quite homeless. Mary wants the hungry to have food. Mary wants the oppressors to be overthrown. And Mary has a more profound trust than I do that God can accomplish this. I'm a bit skeptical. But I'm also sure that Mary knows a thing or two about sneaking around the edges of authority and finding the crafty solutions and about bending the world as an unwed pregnant woman in the way that in science fiction and in real life, outsiders and underdogs find crafty, creative, and collective ways to fight for justice. Crafty, creative, and collective. So despite my earlier critique of Isaiah's assumptions about bodies needing to be pure and healed, I want to remember our deep human desire for healing of our bodies when we're sick, and the grief and loss we experience when bodies are not healed. We've wished that God would make it different. This week, I'm especially thinking of Roland, who died on Monday. And this week, I was following the news story from Oakland, California, about a fire in a warehouse. It wasn't an empty warehouse. It was a warehouse that had been transformed over time by artists into something like a museum of creative beauty, room after room after room of personal artistic transformative vision. And it was a space that hosted musicians and created events for collective dancing and celebration. And for some, it was a safe space, free from judgment, where people with various gender identities and transgender identities gathered together to be creative. And last weekend, it caught fire, and many people were trapped and died. So this morning, I imagine Isaiah's vision of the community on the road together as a warehouse full of artists, in a space that's free from rent increases and safe from fire danger. I also imagine Isaiah's vision in our mornings on Orange Street, where we're caring for children before school. And yesterday afternoon, I was in this room for the second stand-up Lancaster community meeting where people are organizing efforts to work for the safety of everyone in our community. And as I was coming here, walking down Orange Street, there were people in front of me and behind me on both sides of the street and coming across and up our front steps. And I thought, that's the vision of the community on the way to Zion. Later, you can remind me and each other of more of the ways that we together are helping God feed the hungry and overthrow the authorities, or the ways that we see our community on the road together. But I need your help to imagine with Mary, what if the fires of justice burn? What if dawn draws near? What if the world is about to turn?
Now take your third hymnal, the Purple Book. Turn to number 124.